Hey guys, it's Owen here again. Gonna do another one of these quick little, this one's actually a little bit longer. I think it's about a 45-minute chat. I'm hesitant to call them podcasts because they are very free form and just kind of shooting the shit as we were, just about, everything going on in the world today, seeing as that we're all stuck at home. And this one is from our good friend, all the way from the UK. This is Mark Hales, formerly of the Waxing Lyrical podcast. And he gives us a little bit of an update of what's going on in his world. And hopefully you enjoy it. Hello.
Oh, you can hear me. Sorry, I thought I was talking to myself then.
Nope, you got it. It sounds good.
Well, I'm only using an iPod. Not even an iPhone, it's an iPod.
Oh, that's pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah, I was in what was the Waxing Lyrical Studio, but of course now it's my ham radio shack.
All right, so you've gotten back into that now.
How are you doing?
Not too bad. Feeling a little bit better today, man. I've been battling this migraine off and on the last couple of days, and they always just take me a day or two to recover from, and it's like... just a little bit cloudy today, you know, but just trying to take it easy, and thankfully it's not like I've got anywhere to go.
No, you and me the same, mate. It's really quite strange, in fact, you know, really weird. It's like one day's blurring into the next. I suppose the saving grace for me is I'm working from home.
Right.
I can do my normal day job. And before this started, I would work from home sort of one day a week, or the odd afternoon I would sneak off at lunchtime when I was working at an office relatively local and just go home and do what I've got to do. But now sort of I'm forced to do it. And of course, my wife, Jo, she's a registered childminder. So she's no longer got any children in the house. So she's effectively unemployed.
Right.
Then Emily, my eldest, has got her own business, and she can't have any clients. So she's effectively unemployed. And Charlotte, my youngest, I say youngest, she's 20 years old.
Gosh, wow.
You know, Emily's 23. I mean, Ty would be interested, I'm sure. But yeah, 20 and 23. But, like Charlotte's working from home, in as much as the government is paying 80% of her wage and her company has to pay 20%. So really, for me, work-wise, apart from being told I've got to work from home, which is weird in itself, nothing's changed. It's a little bit of a strain at the moment with, trying to concentrate and get on and do things. Maybe I'm not as productive as I would have been, but it is what it is, you know, and we can't do anything about it. As I say, it's unprecedented in my 57 years,
right?
Something like this, you know. We've been through lots when I was a youngster. We went through lots of weird and wonderful things. You obviously weren't alive, but in the early 70s, we had what was known as like regular power outages, where the workforce was on a 3-day week, and the power stations used to shut down at various times of the day and night, and the lights would go out just randomly.
Right.
You'd have no lights, you'd have no electricity for sort of 4 hours, you know, and that sort of thing. So yeah, I say I've been through quite a lot, and there was always the worry in times of the 70s and 80s.
Well, you had the IRA, didn't you? And you had all that stuff going on. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, the IRA actually was one of those things. It never, ever fazed me as a youngster. It was sort of normal. You know, when an IRA bomb went off in London, in a pub, wherever it went off, and it murdered people left, right and centre, it was sort of, they've done it again. Do you know, it was just
right.
It was really weird. You know, you just accepted it. Oh, look, the Irish have killed 14 people in a pub or a hotel, or blown up some soldiers and killed the horses in Hyde Park and places like that. And it was sort of normal in a way. I know it's not normal, and that might sound weird to somebody that didn't live through it. But of course, the late 70s as well, and me and Phil have talked about this in the past on our old show. You know, in the late 70s and throughout the 1980s to 1989, we always had that spectre of the nuclear bomb. And it, for us, it wasn't a case of if the bomb drops. We would always used to say when the bomb drops. You know, we expected it in some shape or form to happen. And so it was normal once again. And, you know, there's various scenarios, isn't there, in science fiction of the world ending. And the three scenarios are like nuclear war, an asteroid impact, or a virus. And when all this started happening, I did think to myself, oh, that don't sound good.
Yeah,
and then, of course,
yeah.
When we got to the beginning of March and then it was getting serious, I was actually thinking to myself, I don't like this. I know how this is going to go. As it is, you know, it's probably not the end of the world and the end of mankind, but it's still really, really, as I say, really, really, you know, compared to all the things I've been through, just weird.
Well, I think
that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah,
weird.
Yeah. Well, I think for us, I mean, it's we're used to having, you know, like things like hurricanes, and we're used to having like sort of these natural disasters where they come through. You get prepared. You stock up on all your stuff. You're in the house. You lose power, but then it's over and it's just done as quick as it began. Whereas that's such a localized thing to us, you know, in Florida and, you know, certain parts of the world. This is so much different, obviously, in the fact that it is the whole world. It's not just isolated to one area. It's literally affecting everybody, rich, poor, doesn't matter where you're from. It's everywhere. So one of the things I did want to talk to you about, of course, is the fact that it sounds like your nephews had a bit of a rough go of it.
Yeah. Okay, so the story there was my nephew's Tom. Tom's 27 years old. He's my youngest sister's eldest son. He went to work, because it was a couple of weeks ago now. He went to work on the Thursday, and he wasn't feeling too good. He just thought, you know, sore throat, not feeling too clever. And he went to work, and they said, such and such, you know, a manager has been tested positive for COVID-19. And when he said, oh, I haven't been feeling too clever, they said, you better go home and self-isolate. You know, that's the rule. So off he went. On the Friday, he was definitely feeling bad. On the weekend, he was particularly nasty with it. So he's had heart problems in the past. So he thought, you know, just in case it's not, you know, like a virus and I'm having a heart attack because of the chest pains that he was getting,
He
decided to call the paramedics. So they came out, and because this was relatively new to the UK, they weren't too sure how to handle it. But they obviously didn't want to get infected, and he needed to be checked. So this is the state of the play. Was he was in his doorway, his front doorway to the street, and the paramedics basically did their tests there and then. So an ECG and things like that, they did through the open doorway. So he's just inside the door. They're just outside the door. That's how bad it was, because they didn't know how to handle this situation.
Right.
They basically cleared him of heart problems and said, you're showing all of the symptoms of this coronavirus, so you need to self-isolate 14 days. Well, he went back indoors and he isolated himself in his bedroom because he lives with his brother and one of my brothers, his uncle, like, lives there as well. So, you know, the two of them kept away from him. By the Wednesday, he was phoning my mum, his nan. He was phoning her and saying, I really feel ill. It's struggling to breathe. The pain is intense in my chest and back, blah, blah, blah. And my mum said to him, you know, Tom, if it's that bad, maybe it's time now that you got yourself to the hospital.
Yeah.
So sure enough, on the Wednesday, they took him into hospital. By the Thursday, they confirmed that he'd got coronavirus. He'd actually been tested positive and had advanced stages of pneumonia. And so now the panic sets in. You know, he's 27 and it's my family. You know, it's a bit close to home.
He lives
a few
miles
away from me, but it's a bit close to home. So now you're thinking, well, hang on a minute. This is meant to be bad for old people and people with pre-existing conditions, i.e. lung problems and that. So, as it was, they put him on, obviously, a big cocktail of medication. They had him on oxygen, put him on oxygen, obviously, on the Wednesday. And I think it was the Sunday they took him off the oxygen. And on the Monday, he was discharged with a pocket full of tablets. And basically told, you know, you need to now rest. Rest is the thing, but you've got away with it. And it was only, I think it was yesterday, I've been ringing my mum every day. And she said, yeah, I spoke to Tom yesterday. So this would have been Sunday that she spoke to him. And he said he can now walk up the stairs without getting out of breath. So you imagine a typical English two-story house.
Steep staircase, yeah.
Yeah, the staircase itself, just, I mean, you're talking, what, 25 steps? That's all it is. And when he first got home, he couldn't get up those steps without panting for breath at the top. And but now he can do that. So he's obviously on the mend. But, yeah, very, very close to home.
And very concerning, too, when, again, it's somebody that, you know, relatively decent health. I know you said he had some scares before, but 27 years old, you're not expecting, you know, a guy to be that bad off not to be able to walk up a flight of stairs.
Yeah. But, you know, as it says, you know, it's like a lot of things. You know, when you're traveling, like I travel to the US, obviously, quite often. And in the early days when we used to come to the US, late 80s, early 90s, and there was a few aircraft scares. You know where, I think it was the Boeing 737, I think it was Boeing, whoever makes the 737.
I think it's Boeing.
And they had a problem with the engines actually falling off the aircraft. So, you know, there was a few accidents. And we was due to come to the States that year, and it was, we knew we'd be flying on a 737 with a stopover at Bangor in Maine. Mm-hmm. And you know, and it's all, we don't want to go anymore. But as it was, they grounded the whole fleet of aircraft, all airlines, and they found the cracks. Now, the engines were held on, I think, by three bolts. That's all it is, holding those engines onto the wings. And there was fractures around all of the mounting points. So once they discovered what the problem was and corrected it,
relatively easy fix then, yeah.
Yeah, but you think to yourself as well, right, the chances of us dying in an air accident involving this particular aircraft is probably negligible now, even though it was negligible before.
Right.
But now it is negligible because some people have sacrificed their lives so that we can fly a few months later.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, so, and it's like this with this virus. Because Tom's had it and he's had it bad and recovered, A, that gives you hope, but B, and it's a little bit irrational, B is, well, someone in my family's had it. What's the chances of two people in my immediate family having it that bad? You know, because obviously the general thing is the 98% of people that are surviving it that you're not told about in the news. And obviously the reasons for that is, if they concentrate on the people that are ill and the people that are dying, because we're just approaching 2,000 people dying now.
Yep.
And, you know, if you concentrate on that, people go, whoa, hang on a minute, I ain't going outside. They're going to stick to the rules. If you announce on the news and the survival rate today is 98.4%, people are go, see,
yeah,
nothing wrong.
Let's go to the
and
pub.
So
that's all.
Up.
Yeah, course, yeah.
you translate that into a population of nearly 70 million people, and those people all go out, and suddenly that death rate and the survival rate numbers would start to change quite rapidly. So if you look into it without the doom and gloom and too much scare, then I think this is a pain in the ass, but at the same time, I think we're all going to come out of it pretty good by Christmas. I don't see us being allowed freedom of the roads just yet until after the summer. I think we're probably talking 6 months.
I don't know if it's going to be that long over here. I think that we're probably going to be in our homes for at least another 30 days or so. I mean, most of the prediction models are kind of leading us to believe we're thinking, you know, sort of late May in being able to get back to some normality of life. But it's that late May sounds like a hell of a long time.
Well, it's another 2 months, isn't it? It's the 1st of April tomorrow, so that's 2 clear months if you say late May.
Yeah,
2 clear months. But, you know, I mean, we're on, in inverted commas, lockdown now. And lockdown, you know, is not quite a lockdown because we still do have freedom of movement. You know, we can still go to the shops.
We
can still go for daily exercise locally, that sort of thing.
Yeah, same as here, really, I think. Pretty much identical.
Yeah, so, you know, although they said 3 weeks, well, I don't believe, because 3 weeks after the end of next weekend, that will be the end of it. Well, I think that's where, around about, we're going to peak with hospital admissions and people dying. Then hopefully it will plateau, and then hopefully we'll come down the other side. So 3 months is probably more like it than 3 weeks. Then if then it starts to climb again, we're going to go through it all again. So 6 months. To be honest, I think the scientists will come up with something a lot quicker than they ever have done.
Yeah.
You know, and that's my hope, is that we can get out of this mess with the hope of the scientists. With all due respect to those that believe, I don't have blind faith. I am an atheist, and so I can only go the science route, and they're the people that are going to do it for us. Unless, of course, we've either had it or will have it, and we're the lucky ones that don't even suffer with it.
Don't you show know, any so symptoms or anything.
Carriers,
yeah.
You know? So anyway, that's that doom and gloom over then, Owen.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know, you got to laugh about it. And I do laugh. As I say, I'm in a house with 3 women. I mean, I'm in trouble anyway.
Exactly. I mean, I can't imagine how it must be real easy to get some quiet time to do some work.
Well, as I say, it's not that bad. There is a little bit of competition. Obviously, the broadband in the whole area is being hammered to death. I've been able to carry on with my work. Not too much of a problem. Charlotte hasn't really been involved with the broadband so much. Emily's the one I feel sorry for, because her business, she's been trying to now, because she can't see the clients directly, she's trying to diversify. And she's got a laptop that I think has been subject to a DDoS attack, you know, distributed denial of service. Because as soon as she puts her laptop on and tries to upload what she's doing, suddenly our broadband collapses. I can't get on with my work. And I have to say to her, Emily, you just got to turn your laptop off. And she's going, but Dad, I need to do this. I'm sorry, you know, out of the two of us, it won't stay up. So I did play about with her laptop last night. I think I've discovered, basically, she didn't have any antivirus on it, and she's had the laptop 6 months, so she's quite possibly been somewhere, or it's just been open to attack.
Yeah.
You know, there's been vulnerabilities. You know what youngsters are like? I say she's a youngster, she's 23, but she, you know, the first thing on their mind isn't, is my network secure? Is my laptop secure? And am I going to a dodgy website? And all these pop-ups that say, click yes, they blindly click yes, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I think today we haven't had any problems. So I'm hoping that we've cured it, and she can get on with trying to build her business back up. But remotely.
Good. Yeah, it's a bit the same for us here. Well, thankfully, I've been actually quite impressed with our internet so far. I've been having issues with my Wi-Fi in general for a little while now. But if I run everything just straight Ethernet and then I'm good to go. But of course, I don't want to crash the network, or I don't want to ruin anything, because Therese is the one that is able to work from home between the two of us. I'm completely redundant right now. I don't have any work coming in, and so if anybody's gonna get the use of the internet at the moment, it's gotta be her. So that's an adjustment in and of itself, just having her around the house all the time. And we've got her all set up in the kitchen with two monitors, and she's made a little office out of it. So we're dealing with it as best as we can.
Yeah, because your job is a physical job, isn't it? You can't do your job by remote control. But is there any way maybe you could diversify for the time being, or is it just not worth the trouble?
It's probably not worth it in the short term. I'm definitely looking into options as far as more long-term work, and at least finding something on the side that I can do. Probably from the house or something. More related to that. But for now, I mean, it's just a case of seeing when things clear up and whether, the industry picks up and all these corporate events, get rescheduled. And, we're talking all these, huge, conferences and what have you. Well, I don't know that they're going to be coming back for quite a while, even if this does clear up, just because that scare is going to be there. And a lot of those things in, the meantime have already gone to these virtual meetings and virtual conferences. And honestly, I don't think that there's just not going to be as much of a demand as there once was, especially when they figure out that it's way cheaper to do it like this, and probably without, too much difference in the end of the day. So it could have a real knock-on effect is what I'm almost more worried about. We can get through the initial attack or what have you, but what's it going to be like in 6 months, in 12 months? Is the industry going to rebound in the same way that it has been?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, my old co-host Phil, the Flallon.
Yeah, Phil.
He's got his own business. Well, that's on hiatus at the moment. He's basically his company was Dominion Property Maintenance.
That's right.
And it is what it says. He was a property maintenance, so he would look after whether it was offices, houses, basically all, anything from fitting kitchens to building walls to changing a tap washer. He had 1,001 jobs, and of course, a long term fan of the show. Bucky, Colin.
Sure.
He's exactly the same, got the same sort of company. He can't do any work at the moment. I know so many people. My friend who I used to drag race with, he's a driving instructor. He's got no work at the moment. It goes on and on and on. It's only people like myself that work for the big corporations in a very technical sense. For those that don't know me, I work for a big telecom stroke multimedia company. I've been there just over 26 years now, and I'm in IT, the people like us, no problems whatsoever, because the very nature of our work and the technology means we can work remotely. But I feel sorry for those people, and thousands upon thousands and thousands of them all around me that are suddenly out of work, and how the economy, and this is the weird one, how has the economy suddenly found the money to keep these people afloat?
That is a very weird one. And I mean,
where are we getting it from, because we never had it before this virus hit. Every government is claiming poverty, and when the infrastructure, same as our National Health Service, our police, our army, blah, 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 they're on quite a low wage, you know. Those services in this country have never been paid that well. But suddenly the governments have managed to find money for the best part of like 20 million people. It's just weird. And are we going to pay for this? Like, you know, I think I said to you in a message, you know, we only finished paying for World War II in the year 2006. That's Great Britain finished paying back the Americans and the Canadians in 2006. So where are we getting this money from this time, and how long are my children and grandchildren going to be paying for this? I think it's going to be a bloody long time. Admittedly, it's not something like World War II that lasts 5 years, but the bill, I mean, they're talking billions upon billions in this country. Europe is talking probably trillions, and your own president is talking several trillion dollars. Yeah. And a trillion is just one of those joke numbers.
Exactly. You can't even visualize it, can you? It's like gazillion or something like that.
Yeah, it's really, really quite weird and quite sobering, you know. And you think to yourself, this money, it doesn't really exist.
It never existed, did it? That's, I think, what we're learning. They're just... They're printing it, aren't they? I mean, they're printing it without having anything to back it up at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, the only good thing that can come out of this is ever since the banks crashed in 2008, my mortgage rate dropped to an all-time unheard-of low. It was at 1.45% for many, many years. A few years ago, it went up to 1.7. Now it's dropped to around... one or less of 1%.
Wow.
And it does mean, though, that my mortgage, I was hoping to have it paid up when I'm 60, which is just over 2 years, or just under 3 years. And I was hoping to have it done by the time I was 60, so I could go into semi-retirement. Now, because I'm still working, I think I could have my mortgage paid up in the next year to 18 months. Which means I could technically retire when I'm around 58 and a half, 59 years old.
That'd be nice.
But of course, there's going to be dangers with that, because we don't know how long this is going to last. So I'm sort of planning the good times. What I'm trying to do is keep upbeat. But the thing is, when I tell people, do you know what? This virus is brilliant, because I reckon I can retire quicker. And I'm telling people that I've got absolutely no income now, and their mortgages are all on are on a holiday. You know, the banks have basically said, you know, you can have a mortgage holiday, so they're allowing them to take a 3 month rest, you know. And so I'm sort of banging on like a raging bull, charging blindly around a china shop. Guess what? It's brilliant. And I'm telling the people that it's affecting them the worst. I suppose it's just my nature and my sledgehammer personality. There you go.
Well, you do have to look for silver linings in certain things.
Well,
we've been talking about the... you know, the ramifications it's had for just the environment over here, and how quickly we're seeing, you know, like the smog dissipate over cities and fresh, clean water coming back and all that type of thing. So, you know, if there's it gives you a sense of optimism that Mother Nature in its own sense can rebound, or at least, you know, can get better. And it's not all doom and gloom on that front.
Yeah, well, you know, at the end of the day, it's all good and well. And yeah, the same discussions are happening in this country, you know, that the fact that the ozone layer is repairing above Antarctica, so the ozone hole is getting smaller. CO2 levels have actually dropped where they can measure it. Sulfur dioxide, nitric oxides, have dropped, obviously, because no vehicles are being driven, no aircraft are in the sky. And of course, the planet, I would imagine, will cool down 0.001 of a degree or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's in a way, it's good, but the problem is it is that when this is all clear, you know that industry isn't just going to start up, but it's going to start up on steroids.
Yeah, you're
and
right.
And I reckon in the year that it takes us to actually heal the earth, as it were, I reckon within like 6 weeks we can be back to where we were.
Right.
But
we'll undo all the good that we've that has happened. Yeah.
But what it will do. I suppose I'm a little bit skeptical on global warming. What it will do, it will prove a point, and then it will help the skeptical understand that maybe it is a real thing. So I'm not going to say, you know, I don't believe in global warming, but I am skeptical to the extent of mankind's global warming. But you know, if
this could either disprove
us,
or prove it, you know, I mean, it could, it could most certainly go either way.
Well, I think this, you know, if what they're saying is true and the earth is healing itself, then, you know, I think then we've got the scientific data to turn around and go, there you go. This is what we need to do. We've had this massive experiment and it proved it. And I think people then will just shut up, you know, and just get on with it. But we can do keep a track of the news as well globally, not just obviously in the UK and Europe. But I was indifferent to Trump, but I've got to say, I don't think he's behaved in a particularly brilliant way over this.
I agree.
I don't know if maybe he's been ill-advised, misadvised, or if just because of his very nature, he doesn't want the advice. He's going with an almost childish gut feeling.
Right.
And I've been watching him more so in the last, I suppose, the last 3 or 4 weeks. And I've actually come to dislike him. Now, I know he's your president, mm-hmm. but, I don't know. You know, like, it's almost like, you know, I'm going to say that America's going back to work by Easter, and what I say goes.
Yeah.
But this time, it can't, you know. You know, it's far too big. And I don't know how you feel about that. I mean,
I feel like he's finally changing his tune a little bit and coming to terms with it. I think at first it was almost an ignorance is bliss type thing that he didn't want to believe it and therefore was going to, you know, downplay it as much as possible. And he did very much so in the early stages. I think you're seeing just probably out of necessity at this point, him having to change his tune slightly. But yeah, I think his handling of the situation has left a lot to be desired.
Yeah. Well, that is who he is and what he does. And we just have to see how that one pans out.
Absolutely.
But going off on a tangent, and I've been listening to your shows. I'll tell you how far I've got. I've caught up with, I was listening to the one with Alex Moorhead.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a while ago. The short chat that we did not too long ago.
So basically, I think you've got one with Daniel Dennis.
Yeah.
Then you've got a full show. Then there's another one, then I think a full show, or I know there's a couple of full shows. I've seen it on my device.
Yeah.
So I am catching up, but what's really weird is because I listen to your show when I'm driving to and from work, and it's particularly good when I'm driving to Croydon, which is just over an hour's drive away.
Right.
Because, you know, I can listen to half the show going. And I listen to half the show coming home. So it's really quite nice. And it's quite amusing that sometimes I'm literally, I don't know what other drivers think, but I'm shouting in the car, you're getting it wrong again. You're getting it wrong again. And you know, and I want to join in.
That doesn't sound like us. That doesn't sound like us. It's been really weird for us because we feel like we want to obviously keep putting out content because people need it at this time. People are bored. Yeah. People need stuff to listen to. But we're also not at a point really where, of course, we want to hang out all together in a room for a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we've been doing the show, you know, remotely, and obviously that comes with its challenges, just not being able to to, you know, visual eye contact and things like that. You know, those cues that you're just so used to being able to play off of each other with aren't there anymore. And then of course you've got Mikey falling asleep on phone calls in just the same way that he always would do, I guess. But
well, as I say, I've never met Mikey B, and he does sound like a character.
He certainly is.
I've got to say, it's almost because I've had some interaction with him on Facebook as well, and it's almost like I do know him.
Sure,
he's got that sort of character personality, which is out there in your face, but at the same time annoying and at the same time likable.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
So I
feel that I know him almost as well as I know you and Ty. And of course, I've met you and Ty and a few of the others from the past. You know, I've met you quite a few times now. I've been to your house 4 times.
Yep.
But
you've met Duncan, I'm pretty sure. Duncan was around, I'm sure, in the first time. I know you've met Duncan.
No, I've met Duncan in 2013.
Yeah.
And when did I come to the States? 13, I come to your house. And 15 and 16,
yeah.
I was there. And in 2018, obviously, I come to pick up my package of very hard drugs from your house. Well, I've still got that package. I still haven't opened it, believe it or not.
That's hilarious. That was actually some ham radio thing then, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's CB radio actually.
So you've given up the podcast again this time around, and you've gone more back into your old hobby of who do you even talk to?
What do you mean? Who do I talk to?
Yeah,
where, when?
Well, on your CB, like I don't.
No, I don't actually use the CB. The radio. That's a story in itself, which would take far too long for this chat. But it's amateur radio, so it's something that I've been interested in since 1974. And basically, I've got a hell of a lot of transceivers here in front of me now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 transceivers, and then all of the peripheral equipment around it. It's basically, I talk to people all around the world. And I've talked to Americans, Canadians, the Brazilians. I talk to a lot of Brazilians for some reason. yeah, all the time. South Africans, Russians. I've actually learned French, German, Italian, Spanish, and a little bit of Russian just by talking to these people around the world. Uh-huh. And my logbook show nearly 5,000 contacts since I got my first license in 2017. And we got a 3-license system in this country, foundation, intermediate, and full. And I'm now a full license holder.
Oh,
I've taken
cool.
all the necessary exams, done all the necessary courses and that. I suppose it's equivalent to... it used to be City and Guilds in this country. I suppose a diploma or higher than a diploma, but nowhere near as high as a degree,
right,
is the level that I'm at in radio communications. So
It
was just something that I've always been interested in. I build my own radios as well. I've always built my own radio since I was a kid. So now I can build the transmitters. Now I'm qualified and licensed to build, test, and use them on air. So it's just another hobby, you know. But as for the podcasting, that what happened there as well, as you know, we operated for 4 or 5 years on a weekly basis. We had sponsors. The show was doing really well. But, of course, Phil had, do you remember, he developed cancer, bowel cancer. As it was, he survived it, and everything was good. But he decided, you know, he just wanted to do something else. So we shut the show down. It was about a year to 18 months later, I got, you know, like a cat on hot tin roof. And so I just wanted to do just the podcast again.
Mm-hmm.
And Phil said, you know, if you're only going to do something monthly, he said, I might be on board. So I said, right, well, we've still set up to do it. So let's do it monthly. We got to doing it monthly. But because of the hiatus and B, because we're doing it monthly, the live listeners never came back in their droves like they did before.
Yeah, it's consistency, you know, is king, isn't it, really?
The chat rooms were light on the ground. Andy Frost, our big sponsor from the weekly show, he was willing to sponsor us again. And obviously, I felt a bit a bit weird about taking a lot of money off the man, because obviously he was going for that world record at the time.
Yeah.
And we were raising money for him, and he was sort of giving us part of it back. And I said to him, Andy, look, I'm going to be honest with you, mate. I said, yeah, we just haven't got the live listeners. And I said, the podcast downloads is now hit and miss. Some weeks, we, you know, or some months now, we're getting quite a few downloads. Other months, not so many. I think it's just when people can be bothered and our old diehard fans. And I said, I can't take your money. I said, let's see how it goes for a while. As it was, what did we give it? Another year or so. And then in December last year, I decided, you know, I'm flogging a dead horse here. We don't have the luxury of the the podcast community and the live show community
yeah.
that you have in Florida and especially Orlando. I think a lot of it was because of the personalities such as Tom and Dan. You know,
no, absolutely. I mean, that and just the fact that we all grew up on 104.1 Real Radio.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just part of our culture.
You know, and of course, Samantha Ha, she's got her podcast and various other people, all these offshoots,
mm-hmm.
but they're all faces that you know, that you recognize, that you can relate to. In England, you know, I never found another podcast like me and Phil did. And I mean, I've been listening to your podcast since 2009. And I got to say, in the very early days, where I set my podcast up in 2012, and with a few false starts, we got going in 2013. And we sort of based the format and the formula was pretty much on what your show did.
Sure.
Of course, then we went off in our own direction. And, of course, Waxing Lyrical, if you listen to it, you can still find us on iTunes. You still find us on the Podcast Garden. You listen to our show, and you can tell our show is pretty much nothing like your show by the end, you know.
Sure.
It's I could say some adult teenagers basically. You know, and if we're going to offend anyone, it's going to be everyone, you know. But anyway, that was it. But you know, it got to the point where I just said, we can't do this, Phil. It's not sustainable. He was getting a little bit bored. But having said that, he's had a few ideas. He came around my house a few weeks ago and he goes, oh, this would have been a good Waxing Lyrical story. This would have been a good Waxing Lyrical story. He goes, oh, this one would have been brilliant for Waxing Lyrical. You know, when you think to yourself, yeah, but really, I've got rid of all the equipment twice. I've sold
right
now. And do I really want to buy another mixing desk, another pair of broadcast microphones, blah, 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 blah. And I know you can do it with a couple of laptops,
mm-hmm.
and you know, pretty much what we're doing now, you know, the technology's evolved to the point where now anyone could do a live stream and a podcast with the minimum fuss.
Yeah.
But there was something about having the proper gear, if that makes sense.
No,
so
it does.
I just got thinking to myself, you know, the other day, I thought, you know, do you know what? While we're doing what we're doing now, like this lockdown and everything, you know, we've all got something to say. Maybe I'll produce, like you've been doing the last week or so, you know, I'll just produce maybe some half-hour podcasts where I sort of spout what I want to spout. And then Phil came up on Facebook the other day and said something about starting up Waxing Lyrical. I think Bucky was in one of the chats, and he said, yeah, we really need a COVID-19 Waxing Lyrical. And I said, okay, Phil, I'm going to message you. I haven't got round to it yet. This was only yesterday. But I think what I'm going to do is set up my main PC with the recording gear and everything on it, do what me and you are doing now,
sure,
and possibly produce a couple of half-hour shows, exactly the same as it was. Now, if we can do a video chat as well, because obviously at the moment you and I are just doing audio, mm-hmm. if we can do a video chat, as you say, you can get the eye contact, I reckon we could try and make it work. Now, I'm not saying it's for relaunch again of Waxing Lyrical, but we have got a few fans. We've still got the Facebook page, and some of our fans are in the States. They're expats, and they keep on saying, you know, I really missed that. I used to love getting me download for the journey to work, blah, blah, blah. And a little taste of home, as it were, for them. So, I don't know. Stay tuned. You may get a couple of shorty podcasts.
Well, I think that's but, a I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I'll have a word with Phil, and I know that some of your listeners in the past have joined, you know, my Facebook group, and I'm sure they've downloaded my show.
Oh, we won't, we always promoted Waxing Lyrical. You're our pod cousins.
Likewise, we always promoted the Oh No Radio show, but now we seem to be promoting the Day Moon. I've seen more Day Moons, right, since Christmas. I've seen more bloody Day Moons than I've seen Night Moons.
I agree.
With Venus as well being around, the Moon and Venus, it's a competition now to see how many bloody photographs I can take of white dots in the sky. It's outrageous. And you can blame Mikey B for that one.
You know, you're absolutely right. Yeah, well, I'll tell you this, it's time for me to go eat some lunch. I think this is a good place for us to wrap up.
Yeah.
It was great talking to you, and maybe we'll do it again in a couple weeks if we're still bored at the house and need someone to chat with. Thanks for your time, man.
It's always a pleasure, and it's nice to be in town with you. And I'll say, you know, stay safe. Send everyone around the Orlando area that knew me or knew of me, send them a hug, a virtual hug.
Will do.
You're a lot closer to than me, and I don't want to catch their stinking germs anyway. But best of love to Teresa from me, Joe, Emily, and Charlotte also.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Flallon and Bucky and all the rest of them and our old sponsor Andy Frost. I'm sure they're all rooting for you over there, for it all to come as good as we know that it's going to come. So I'm getting into amateur radio mode now. I'm rambling. I'm bloody rambling. So all the very best, everyone.
Take care,
stay safe,
and love to you and yours as well.
Just all give each other a virtual hug and be safe.
All
that's
right,
all we can
then. Well, take care, buddy.
Yeah, when you're older. Yeah. Cheers.
Bye.
From Lanarkey. See ya.
Bye. And there you have it. Another talk for Ono Radio Show. That one from Mark Hales, formerly of the Waxing Lyrical podcast. Hope you enjoyed, and we'll catch up with you probably on Thursday. All right. See you.